This is PEN America's continued idea of parents' rights. While parents and guardians ought to be partners with educators in their children's education, you hear that? They ought to be partners. Okay. They ought to be partners with educators in their children's education and need channels for communicating with school administrators, teachers, and librarians, particularly concerning the education of their own children. Public schools are, by design, supposed to rely on the expertise, the ethics, and the discretion of educational professional to make these decisions. Thank you for tuning in to the Removing Barriers podcast. I'm Jay.
And I'm MCG.
And we're attempting to remove barriers so we can all have a clear view of the cross.
This is episode 157 of the Removing Barriers podcast. And in this episode, we will be responding to the viral discussion between MSNBC host Joy Reid and Moms for Liberty co-founder Tiffany Justice.
Hi, this is Jay. MCG and I would like for you to help us remove barriers by going to removingbarriers.net and subscribing to receive all things Removing Barriers. If you'd like to take your efforts a bit further and help us keep the mics on, consider donating at removingbarriers.net/donate. Removing Barriers, a clear view of the cross.
And let me add, you may want to distract your kids from this episode, since we'll be talking about some stuff that is not appropriate for young ears. All right, Jay, let's get into it. Let's talk about the background of this discussion before we give our reaction to the discussion.
In late January of 2024, Moms for Liberty co-founder Tiffany Justice sat down with Joy Reid of the Readout news program on MSNBC to discuss so-called book bans in K-12 public schools across the country. Moms for Liberty is a grassroots political group that seeks to push back against the highly questionable curriculums and practices of the American public school system that have come to light during the pandemic of 2020. They seek to empower parents to act by providing information, providing resources, and increasing awareness of what's actually going on in our children's public schools. Parents have taken this information and they've called for certain books in their locales to be reviewed or maybe taken off the shelves. The left, of course, is calling this an attack on free speech. They're calling it a book ban. They say it's an attack on education, the right for children to be fully educated. And they call it an assault on parental rights. Joy Reid of MSNBC is, of course, on the left. And so she sees Moms for Liberty as part of a far-right movement to undermine what they call, quote, our democracy. And she engaged accordingly. And the clip has gone viral on YouTube for many, many reasons that we will be addressing in this podcast.
All right. Well, why don't we play the first clip and see what this discussion was all about?
LGBTQ parents and parents of LGBTQ kids, do they have parental rights?
Every parent, Joy. Every parent means every parent has the fundamental right to direct the upbringing of their children.
And liberal parents? Do liberal parents have those rights as well?
All parents.
You know, the interesting part here about parental rights, does the left or the Democrats even believe in parental rights?
No. They only believe in parental rights so far as parents agree with their agenda and their understanding of what children should be learning or how children should be brought up or indoctrinated in their schools. You know that they don't believe in parental rights. We're going to see this later on in the clips that we're going to listen to. But they believe that the children belong to them. Children belong to the state or to the school or to the teachers. And that parents need to cede their authority to them because they're the experts and they know best. And so when they're talking about parental rights, what they're really talking about, the parental rights of people who agree with us or people who raise their kids according to how we think kids should be raised.
Well, it's interesting you said that because here is a clip of our current president, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr., talking about who our nation kids belong to.
Rebecca put a teacher's creed into words when she said, there's no such thing as someone else's child. No such thing as someone else's child. Our nation's children are all our children.
Well, Mr. Biden, come and get them, I guess would be the appropriate response to that. But there you have it. Our nation children are our children. And so, yeah, you're right. The left does not believe in parental rights. But I'm going to go through a series of scripture verses here because I think the Bible, which is our standard of living and not Republican or Democrat, gives parental rights. Mm-hmm. Of course, Ephesians 6, verse 1 to 4, the Bible says here, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. It didn't say children, obey the government in the Lord. It didn't say children, obey your teachers in the Lord, not saying that the children should not obey their teachers or the laws set forth by the government. But the Bible specifically says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that he may be well with thee, and thou mayest live long on the earth. And he, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The Bible clearly there is giving parents a lot of rights. Fathers, don't provoke your children. Not even talking about abuse, just simply provoking them to wrath. The Bible says, don't even provoke them to wrath, but bring them up what? In the nurture and admonition of the Lord. I think the Bible is clearly giving us, give parents a lot of rights there and a lot of blessings to children who decide to honor their father and their mother. And of course, this was coming directly from Exodus 12 and verse 20, where we get the Ten Commandments from. Honor thy father and thy mother, that thy days may be long upon the earth, which the Lord thy God giveth thee. Of course, we can also look at 1 Samuel 3 and verse 13. And the Lord said unto Samuel, behold, I will do a thing in Israel, at which both the ears of every one that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will proclaim against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end, for I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons make themselves vile, and he restrained them not. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever. What are we seeing here? Well, Eli had two grown sons who were basically sinning in the temple of the Lord. Note, two grown sons. And the Lord is going to judge not only the sons, but Eli, their father, because he did not do anything to restrain his son from sinning. Parents have a tremendous responsibility for their children. And the Bible says, even here, he's even judging them, judging a parent for their grown son. Of course, we understand that the Old Testament are not saying that, you know, parents are always going to suffer for the sin of their children. I'm just seeing here as a principle where God judged Eli partly because of the sins of their son. And you can argue, of course, it's because he did not restrain them. Great. Proverbs 6, verse 20 to 23. My sons, keep thy father's commandment and forsake not the law of thy mother. Bind them continually upon thine heart and tie them about thy neck. When thou goest, it shall lead thee. And when thou sleepest, it shall keep thee. And when thou awakest, it shall walk with thee. For the commandment is a lamp, and the law is light, and reproof of instruction are the way of life. And of course, Deuteronomy 11, verse 18 and 19, and he shall teach your children, speaking to them when thou sittest in thine house, and when thou walkest in the way, and when thou liest down, and when thou risest up, thou shalt write them upon the doorposts of thine house and upon thy gates. Seem like the Bible is telling us, hey, you should teach your children. That's why many Christian homes homeschool, because the Bible put the education, the rearing, and the teaching, and the imputed of the moral values upon children by their parents. Of course, you know, we have certain groups that would tell us that there's no such thing as parental rights. And as we said earlier, the left, for most part, in my opinion, don't believe in parental rights. I'm going to play two clips from two TikTokers in Canada saying basically that there's no such thing as parental rights.
No such thing as parental rights. It's not recognized in law. It's not in the charter. It doesn't exist. Children's rights, however, are recognized and have been for a very long time. Parents have responsibility, which is recognized in the law, but no rights. If your child does not want to tell you something about them, that's your problem, not the government's, not the school system's. Maybe you should ask yourself why your child might not want to tell you whatever it is your conspiracy brain thinks that they should have to.
You know, the funny thing about that, when he said there's no such thing as parental rights, as you say, it's only when it's in favor for them. Remember in episode 102, when we discussed with Pastor Todd about abortion, the biblical perspective, and we were talking about a certain school district that the student would have to get a consent from the parents for the school nurse to administer aspirin to a student. But yet, they will administer contraceptives without informing the parents or asking for the parents, right? And of course, they might argue, well, aspirin, there might be allergic reaction. Well, I'm sure she can have allergic reaction to any medication, including contraceptives. It's only when it's in their favor. Oh, there's no such thing as parental rights. Here's another one.
And all of this is happening with this infectious idea that's taking over, of this idea of parents' rights, that parents have a right to know. They have a right to know if their child is going by a different name or using different pronouns in school. And the thing that keeps hitting me about this is that parents don't have rights, not parents' rights. Kids have rights. Individuals have rights. We have seen in our legal and justice systems that the decisions that parents make can be legally overridden by their children. Children who are old enough to understand a concept are old enough to provide their own independent consent to that. And if a kid knows what pronouns are, then frankly, they're able to consent to changing their own pronouns, and their parents do not need to be involved in that decision.
This is absolutely bonkers. That might need to be in a bonkers episode.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I don't like necessarily the right and left division because my standard is the Bible. But I don't think anyone is arguing that children do not have rights. Obviously, they are human beings. They are citizens of a country. Obviously, they have rights. Like, for instance, our two older boys can read. We went to a restaurant the other day, and they were able to read the menu and order what they want. They're individuals, they have preferences, they have likes. However, they're boys, and they would prefer to go to bed without brushing their teeth. We don't give them that choice to say, all right, you don't have to brush your teeth tonight when you're going to bed, because they're children. And we always, in society, know that children do not have the maturity to make certain decisions. So parents protect children until they're of the age of majority, where they can make now certain decisions for themselves. I don't know where the argument comes where that parents doesn't have rights, but children have rights. Parents have rights, children have rights, but parents have a God-given responsibility to raise their children up with their morals in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, not based upon what the government feels. Talking about it, even just recently, the YouTuber Ruby Frank, she was sentenced, at least convicted, probably pending sentencing at this point, but she could receive up to 30 years in prison for abusing her children. If children didn't have rights, why would Ruby Frank be convicted and be sent into jail, prison? Because obviously children have rights. No one is arguing children don't have rights. They know this, that at a certain age, children should not be making certain decisions. And here's another YouTuber. The name of this YouTube channel is Man vs. Street. And he went onto the street and he asked some of these folks a particular question. Should a 12-year-old be able to get a tattoo? And it'd be interesting what they say here.
Do you think a 12-year-old should be able to get a tattoo?
I'm going to say no.
Probably not.
No.
It's probably too young to make decisions.
It's a pretty permanent decision.
They can't make the decision for themselves yet. It's something permanent on their body.
Do you think a 12-year-old should be able to consent to puberty blockers?
Yes.
Yes.
And I understand how that sounds really hypocritical.
Yes, it's a permanent change on their body, but I think that at that point in their life, they probably know who they are, who they want to be.
And you think so at 12 years old?
Yes.
Do you think a 12-year-old should be able to consent to puberty blockers?
Yes, because that's not a permanent decision.
That's a life-changing decision. I don't think that any 12-year-old is in a position to make a decision that's going to affect them long term.
When you get puberty blockers, for a lot of kids, that's like life-saving. It's keeping them from having to go through a puberty. I think puberty blockers are a great sort of like middle ground to allow a child to better understand themselves without having to make decisions like surgery or doing nothing and having to live through a puberty that is not within, that they don't identify with.
I think there's plenty of time to make those decisions later on once they've had a chance to decide exactly what they want their identity to be.
I think that maybe there should be more waiting, but I don't want to like put down trans ideas, so.
Do you think a 12-year-old should be able to consent to puberty blockers?
If they can make an informed decision, yeah.
And you think a 12-year-old can make an informed decision?
I don't know. I guess it depends on the 12-year-old.
Be like a really mature 12-year-old.
Right, yeah.
Because some children you can just tell like when they that decision is legit with them. But like a 12-year-old child, I think that would be a little difficult.
At 12 years old, you have a sense of your gender identity, of your sex identity. So I don't see why. I mean, we know there's kids that young killing themselves because they have so much gender dysphoria that they're having to deal with the struggles of being trans. So why would we, if there's a simple answer like puberty blockers, I think it's one of the best resources.
Okay. Personally. So if a 12-year-old thinks they're a different gender, they should be able to go in and be like, I want puberty blockers.
I mean, I don't think it's that simple as that. I think there's a lot more like medical theory and social wellness that needs to be incorporated into that interaction between a 12-year-old and a doctor, if that's what you're saying they're going to. But I do think that a 12-year-old should have that choice.
What do you have to say to those people that let their children consent to puberty blockers at like 10, 11, 12 years old?
I would say that I disagree with you, and I think you're an irresponsible parent. Bottom line.
So there you have it, a group of people whose ideology totally block any ability for them to think reasonably. I have 4 sons. I'll prefer that they cover their body with tattoo than to go on puberty blockers. And I'm not even for tattoo.
I think the situation here is that, and obviously we live in a pluralistic society, and the majority moral governing understructure of the country is no longer Christianity. And so now we have a question of people who not only live and practice a life of debauchery and deviancy, but they are also parenting children as they continue and live in this lifestyle. And so the question is, do they have rights? And this may be going beyond the scope of what we're trying to address in this particular episode, but perhaps it's something that Christians ought to be thinking about, because if you have people who live and believe like these people that we've heard on TikTok and on YouTube, then in the next several years, goodness, I don't even want to say that because we're in it right now, we're going to have people who are spiritually and morally bankrupt making decisions that will fundamentally and deeply and whatever other adjective change the lives of the children that are in their care, because we've allowed them to adopt children. There is a proliferation of children via reproductive technologies. And so this is a question that we really have to come up with, because in the same way that we can say the Bible says that parents are to raise their children up in the nurture admonition of the Lord, they can turn around and say, well, parents' rights, or I believe that I am raising my children under this moral standard that's not Christianity. And so the question is, how should Christians respond to that? Because these are people who have absolutely rejected Christ as Lord. They've rejected his rule. They've rejected his word. They've rejected his authority. And collectively, they are creating a sort of parallel economy, a parallel society that they're creating space for themselves that allows them to live their lives without fear of any repercussion, immediate repercussion, physical repercussion in this world today for not following the laws of God,
There are a lot of repercussions for their stuff. One is that they're making their children sterilized for the rest of their life.
Well, they would say that that's just what the children want, and that's the result of having this freedom to do as we please. Whereas before, there was a fear among the electorate, among the people, because generally speaking, not individually, but generally speaking, this nation was God-fearing. That fear is gone now.
Well, one, yes, that's true. But the thing is here, to parental rights, do they have parental rights? Absolutely, they do. And they will raise their children according to their beliefs and, quote unquote, their morals. But what is the job for us as Christians? It's to share the gospel with them, pray to the Lord of the harvest that we will have laborers who go in the harvest field and we share the gospel and that they will be saved and turn to the Lord.
Yeah.
So we can't take away their parental rights. But the thing is, I don't think Christians are trying to take away, and I hate to lump Christians and conservative in the same bracket because they're not the same thing, but I'm going to say Christians are conservative, right wing, whatever you want to call them. I don't think anyone on that side, or let's say the opposite of the left and liberal, or opposite of the Democrats, I don't think anyone wants to take away their kids.
Or their so-called parental rights.
Or their parental rights. But I think if they got the opportunity, they will take away our parental rights to raise our children with the moral values that we see, whether it is through scripture or through whatever else we may deem right.
Well, one of the organizations that has risen up against Moms for Liberty is an organization called PEN America. Joy Reid is going to reference them in one of the subsequent clips that we listen to. But their idea of parents' rights, this is from their website, quote, although parents' rights is a powerful piece of political rhetoric, in most instances, it is being invoked to mean rights for a particular group of parents with distinct ideological views, rather than a neutral effort to engage all parents and students in ensuring that schools uphold free speech rights. And later on, we're going to see what they mean by that. But they're saying that anyone who claims parental rights are really just right-wing nuts who want to take everyone else's rights away so that everyone can live under this ideological banner that they call Christianity. And they say that they are for free speech. What they mean by that is everything is allowed without barrier, without restraint, without any measure of censorship. And so that means that all of the books that Moms for Liberty are contending against or calling attention to that are explicit and graphic in many ways, not just sexual, but also in terms of violence and in terms of other undesirable characteristics. Well, these people, they say, these people are against our right to indulge in those things and to expose children to those things. That's what they are saying. And so when they're saying parental rights, it's again, like we're saying, we have the right to show these kids whatever we deem is acceptable. You don't have the right to tell us what to show the kids, even if they're not your kids or even if they are your kids. We decide what is acceptable to show children.
Well, you see, it comes down to this, because now you're making the school an extension of the home. And that's where you get in the issue now.
No, they go beyond that.
Well, what I'm saying is that you're taking a group of kids from many homes and you put them into one school, aka the public school or the government indoctrination centers. And when they get there, then you say, okay, well, all these kids from different homes, different moral values, quote unquote, of course, because God is a creator, he has the right to set forth what is right and wrong and what is morally right and wrong. But let's go along with the way we have our social construct today. In a sense that, you know, well, your kids don't want the filth, but this kid want the filth, and we have to figure somehow to let all of them live together. Well, again, one, you can speak to Christians and say, of course, that's why I will push for homeschool or a solid Christian school. But at the end of the day, there has to be some sort of standard that say something is wrong, don't do it, or something is right, we could do it. And for hundreds of years, we have always protected children in our society from certain things until they become a certain age where they can make certain decisions. But the most important thing here I want to emphasize, though, is that all throughout the rest of the clips, and I'm going to go to clip two pretty shortly here, but all throughout this clip, those TikTok videos that we show on that YouTube, Man versus Street, the argument they make is epitome of the same argument Joy Reid makes. They just want to win an argument, because when you say that a child should not be able to consent to a tattoo, but they can consent to puberty blockers, because a tattoo is permanent, there's a cognitive
dissonance there, yeah.
That you can't even, like, what? One of the young ladies said it. She doesn't want to go against trans ideology. She knows it is wrong. But here's Joy Reid in clip two.
Sure. So let me point you to some statistics, sure. Because the question becomes then who gets to decide what all kids get to read. The Washington Post took a look at about 1,000 plus book challenges that were filed, and they found that they were filed nationwide by just 11 people. Each of these people brought 10 or more challenges against books in their school district. Together, these serial filers constituted 6% of all book challengers, but they were responsible for 60% of filings in Florida. Tampa Bay Times. They found that of roughly 1,100 complaints recorded in Florida since July 2022, we're talking about more than 700 just from two counties, Escambia in the Western Panhandle and Clay County. Together, those are less than 3% of the public school enrollment, 600 of those complaints, two people. Why should 13 people get to decide what books tens of thousands of children get to read?
Well, I'm thinking it's probably because those 13 people saw what some of the content was in the books. I mean, explicit, graphic, sexual content. And I'm happy to talk about some of that content if you'd like to.
Okay, this is so disingenuous what she just did there, okay? She took those statistics from PEN America. PEN America, on their website, makes it clear about their methodology for finding out the number of books that have been banned. They record the banning of books according to two different metrics. Every time a request is made for a book to be banned and that book is actually pulled off the shelf, either temporarily or indefinitely, that's counted as a ban. But at the same time, if a book has been challenged and taken off of the shelves, the individual title is counted as a title ban as well. So let me explain that. There are two different statistics. If you ask PEN America, what is the number of title bans for whatever number of challenges that have been made, they will give you a particular number. That goes to each individual book that has been so-called banned. It's not really banned, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. That's one number. The other number is the total number of bans. So if one title has, say, 10 copies in one library, if all 10 copies were removed from the shelves, that's considered, according to their methodology, 10 bans. So if one parent says, I don't like the book, I don't know, let's call it All Boys Aren't Blue, which is a sexually graphic book about homosexuality and rape, and they'll talk about it a little bit later. If one parent goes to their local high school and they say, I don't want All Boys Aren't Blue on the shelf, and if the school pulls it, if that school has, say, 20 copies of the book, who knows how many copies the school will have, PEN America will count each individual copy as one ban. So you could see that the numbers are inflated, number one. Number two, if that book was pulled across several different libraries, and let's say each library has, I don't know, say 5 copies of the same book, each of those are considered an individual ban. So when they say that, oh, thousands of books have been pulled off the shelves, that's actually an inflated number, and a grossly inflated number, because they're counting replicates of each book. Now, when she says that, oh, why do 13 people get to decide what tens of thousands of families and of children read, what's really just happening, what they're really only talking about is the battle that's happening. She called it nationwide, but it's actually only happening in 3 states right now. Of course, with other states, as the information gets out there, I'm sure more and more parents will take up the fight. But it's really only happening in Florida, where Governor DeSantis has put his foot down on the indoctrination and the infiltration of woke ideology in the schools. It's happening in Florida. I think Utah might be another one, and Tennessee. Those are the hot spots. Those 3 states are the hot spots in the country right now. Perhaps Texas might be in there too. So let's say those are the 4 hotspots in the country. So she can call it nationwide, even though it's literally just 4 states throughout the entire country. And every single time that multiple copies of that one book, whatever it is pulled, that's counted as a ban. So PEN America has a very inflated number of books that have been pulled off the shelves. And they use that, they weaponize it to make it sound like these parents are just marching into these libraries and into these schools with hammers and torches and pitchforks, demanding that all of these books be pulled off of the shelves. And that's just not true. It is not true that only 13 people are trying to ban books and prevent thousands of children from reading them. In addition to that, the books are not just being banned because of the graphic sexual nature of these books. There are also books that have graphic and gratuitous descriptions of physical violence, suicide, how to do suicide, why you feel like you would want to commit suicide. Those are also some of the books that are being removed as well. One of the anchors of the PEN America argument against these parents that are putting in these complaints against the books is that, oh, they just want to ban books that are written by homosexuals, queers, women, marginalized people. But that is absolutely not the case. That's not the only thing that's happening in these particular bans. So I think we need to talk about the quality of the electorate, the quality of the people of the United States. I think that has a significant effect on what's happening in our schools. I'm not speaking ill of our country. I love our country. If you cut me, I will bleed red, white, and blue and scarlet and gold all day because I love our country. However, it is just undeniable that there has been a steady decline in almost every metric in the quality of the people of the United States. What I mean by that is the quality of our education, the depth and the strength of our communities, our biblical knowledge and our fear of the Lord has gone down the tubes. Our personal convictions, our morals, the sheer number of people that are under the influence of drugs and alcohol and all sorts of other addictive substances and videos. We're talking pornography and other things as well, social media addiction and all those things as well. Well, because the electorate is so poor, so morally and spiritually and emotionally and culturally bankrupt, we elect people that have absolutely no business in office. And when these people go into office, whether it's at the local level or at the federal level, they hire people that become the bureaucracy that make all of these long-term decisions that we all go by, that we didn't ask for. And then what we're finding out 20 years later, as a result of a pandemic, let's say, is what has been happening in our schools for all of these years, because we've ceded the education of our children, the raising of our children to these so-called professionals, these so-called professional educators. And so the problem becomes, okay, well, these people do not have our values. They do not share our values. They do not share any measure, any sliver of the fear of the Lord. And so naturally, these books will find their way into these libraries because that's what they care about. And they care about converting your children to their ideology. We did a podcast a couple of episodes ago where the homosexual choir, the male homosexual choir group, is literally singing about converting your children. We're coming for your children. This is not a game to them. They know exactly what they're doing and they're deliberate about it. And so where I was going with that is that I mentioned how PEN America's ideas of parents' rights being what it is, they also believe that, let me just read verbatim what they say on their website. This is PEN America's continued idea of parents' rights. While parents and guardians ought to be partners with educators in their children's education, you hear that? They ought to be partners. Okay. They ought to be partners with educators in their children's education and need channels for communicating with school administrators, teachers, and librarians, particularly concerning the education of their own children. Public schools are, by design, supposed to rely on the expertise, the ethics, and the discretion of educational professionals to make these decisions. In too many places, today's political rhetoric of, quote, parents' rights is being weaponized to undermine, intimidate, and chill the practices of these professionals, with potentially profound impacts on how students learn and access ideas and information in school. So what we're complaining about, what they're doing, which is silencing the parents, usurping their authority, deliberately seeking to convert and change their children, they're accusing parents of doing to them. And what's incredible about that is the fact that they're saying we are professionals. We know what's best for the children. Parents' rights have no realm and no authority here because we know what's best for the children.
Yeah, I'll add this. You said that the quality of the electorate. I don't think the quality of the electorate is a problem. I think the quality of the people is a problem.
Isn't that the same thing? We are the electorate, the people that can vote, the people that are...
Well, yeah, I guess what I was going to say is that the people make up the electorate, and because the people are bad, the electorate are bad.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
That's where I was
going
with that.
So, yes, you're absolutely right. That's what I was trying to say. Thank you for that correction.
You're correct.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
But also, you know what? Just come to mind, because remember, a time ago, two-income household was not a popular thing. Uh-huh. You know, before the Industrial Revolution and all this stuff, it was more, you can even go back and say, when we were more farming community, where the entire family would farm, and then kind of come to the point where the father now can make enough money to raise his kids and the mother can stay home. And then you come to a point where, what happened? Inflation. Excess inflation kind of jaws the mother out of the home. Well, it's not just inflation. It was also the rise of feminism and all these other things. But inflation jaws the mother out of home. What has our current president been doing since he got into office? Excessive inflation. So I might be wearing their tinfoil hat here, but I'm just simply saying, is this a way for them to jaw the mother out of the home again? Because remember, during the pandemic, a lot of mothers came home and started taking care of their kids, and a lot of them haven't gone back into the workplace.
Yeah.
So is this inflation a way to jaw that parent, that mother especially, back into the workplace? Because, hey, you can't survive on one income. You probably could, because inflation was so calm under Trump and calm before that under Obama. Well, now we're going to raise inflation, and I'm going to jaw the parents out of their homes so they don't have no choice but to send their kids to the government indoctrination centers, aka public schools. So anyways, but it goes back here. She said, who decide what all kids get to read?
Mm-hmm.
No one decides what all kids get to read. I, as a parent, get to decide what my kids get to read. But I can tell you who doesn't decide it. It's not the teachers.
Right.
It's not the school boards. It's not the libraries. So who gets to decide what my kids get to read? I'm their father. I decide that. Not a teacher at the school board. And I won't send my kids to government indoctrination centers anyway. But again, as I said, until yesterday, society have always wanted to protect kids from the filth that's in the world. And today, we're just like, give them all. So where do we draw the line to the filth that kids are able to see and read? The line has to be drawn someplace. Well, if the government draw a line and I say, okay, that line is not drawn close enough for me, as a parent, I can decide that. And as a parent, someone else, you can decide what you want to give your kids. But don't make the decision for me and everybody else that don't want the kids to have that filth. If you want to have that filth, give it to your kids.
No, okay, so here's what they're saying. They're saying that if you don't want that filth, you can go to these media centers, these school libraries, and you can get an opt-out form that doesn't allow your child to partake in whatever book that is. Well, see, here's the problem with that. When we allow that, when we make that the solution, the problem is that the standard, the default is debauchery. We're going to have all of these terrible things on the shelves. And if you don't want it, you have to say that you don't want it. Where it should be the other way around. Let's have a level of decency. And if you want to go the debauched route, you need to go up and out of your way to go that debauched route. We're not going to make that easy for you to go ahead and do that. But at the same time, I understand what they're saying. I want to try to be charitable because we have to share a country with these people. But at the same time, I understand what their concern is about the banning of books. Once you start banning books, where does it end? I understand that argument. That's a legit argument, because when one of the other things that is not mentioned in this interview between Joy Reid and Tiffany Justice is that in response to a lot of the so-called book bans in Florida and in Tennessee, Texas, there were liberal parents who were filing petitions to ban the Bible in these media centers and in the libraries of these schools. And so understandably, if it's a tit for tat thing where you have a deep fundamental rift and you don't know where it's going to end, I can understand why you would think a book ban would be just as bad for the left as it is for the right. I get that. I understand that. Okay, we're on the same page there. But when you're talking about the deliberate decision to expose children to adult content, that's where we really have an issue there.
Well, we're going to get to that, because they do talk about that in some later clips. But it goes back to this. We have to have some sort of foundation, right?
And but the country's bifurcated.
I understand that, but that doesn't change the fact that God is our creator and he set the standard for our moral values. Whether or not you want to accept that, that's fine. But again, it comes down to this in my mind. Who has the right to educate children? That's parents. But for the government indoctrination centers, this would not be an issue. So we have to come back and say, hey, where are we willing to draw the line? And you have a point there, but let's go to clip three and see what Joy Reid has to say.
Well, this is the question again. The books that are being banned, I want to give you just
no
some...
No books
hold
are
on,
being banned.
No, hold on a second.
Well, no, Joy, but I want to be clear. No one's banning books. Write the book, print the book, publish the book, put the book in the public library, sell the book, right? We're talking about a public school library. Children don't have unfettered access to the internet at school. Mm-hmm. I did a FOIA records request, and I wanted to see what kinds of internet sites are banned in schools, if we're going to talk about banning, right? Mm-hmm. And the subject matter in the books that moms are concerned about are the same things that kids don't have access to on the internet. So it just feels very hypocritical, right? No, why is no one out there protesting for, you know, free the internet in schools?
Let me give you an example of some of the books that have been removed from shelves as a result of the activities of organizations like Moms for Liberty.
Wait, we're not going to talk like Moms for Liberty. We're going to talk specifically
Moms
for Liberty.
Absolutely.
So it's
Pan America.
I'm happy to have this conversation with you, Joy.
Absolutely.
But we're going to be specific about the actions of Moms for Liberty chapters.
Oh, 100%.
Because I can't be possibly responsible for every single parent in
America.
But
your organization is the lead. You're the leading organization that's doing this. You have chapters all over the country. And other organizations are following your lead. And Pan America has listed, they have posted the list of books that have been removed from shelves as a result of these activities. Let me just read you a couple of them. Anne Frank's A Diary of a Young Girl. Mouse, which is a book about the Holocaust, a graphic novel. Gender Queer, a memoir. All Boys Aren't Blue. Beloved, Martin Luther King Jr. and the March on Washington. Ruby Bridges Goes to School. Slaughterhouse-Five, The Color Purple. Forever by Judy Blume. I could go on. These are books that are not only popular, in some cases are classics. Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye.
You know, I'm going to turn it over to you, Jay, but you know what she did here, right?
What's that?
Anne Frank, A Diary of a Young Girl, mm-hmm. Holocaust/race, mm-hmm. Mao, Holocaust/race, gender queer, porn, LGBT propaganda. These are the categories I'm putting them in.
Okay.
These might not be the categories they're in, but these are the categories I'm putting them in. All Boys Ain't Blue, porn/LGBT propaganda.
Okay.
Beloved, slavery, civil war times. Martin Luther King Jr., of course, the March of Washington, race, civil war stuff. Ruby Ridges, Go to School, race. Slaughterhouse, I think that has to do with race as well. The Color Purple race and The Bluest Eye race. So
Slaughterhouse, I think, is an anti-war book.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think some race might be implied. Mm-hmm. But anyways, the point is here. You notice how she cushioned the LGBTQIA propaganda in with the race and the stuff. Because
I did not notice that.
A lot of parents may not even have a problem with their kids reading like Martin Luther King Jr. and the March to Washington or Ruby Ridges Go to School.
Yeah.
But however, what they really are opposed to and which they really should be opposed to are the pornographic books like Gender Queer, All Boys Ain't Blue.
Yeah.
And this book is gay and all these things. As I said, parents should decide whether they want their kids to read any of these books or any book in particular. But when you start sandwiching these books with the extreme book like Gender Queer and stuff like that, and it's not just the words you're reading. Some of these books have graphical depiction.
Not just graphical, but also it's not even...
Pictures in the books of what the book is describing.
But not only that, they're not even describing it or talking about it in a respectable or even academic. It's all very vulgar language, swearing, and the vulgar words for whatever appendages or whatever violent actions that are happening. So it's not just graphic. It's also absolutely explicit and vulgar as well. And you know, and I didn't even notice that's what she did. She took a classic like The Diary of Anne Frank, and then she took Ruby Ridges Goes to School, and then she sandwiched all of the LGBTQ stuff in the middle, which is absolutely insane. I did not notice that. That was deliberate, because when you start rattling off a list of things, people hear the first two or three, right? And then they kind of tune out a little bit because they're like, okay, this is the list of books that are banned. And if it's Diary of Anne Frank, and if it's Martin Luther King, and all of these other ones, they already associate all of the other ones. Their brain kind of tunes out and says, oh, you know, these are all classics. These are all good books to read. These are all great things to read. And that's actually not the case. And as I said, we used some of the resources that were in that interview to see exactly what's in that book. It's not just explicit. It's not just graphic, because there are depictions of these things. It's also vulgar in its language. So we should also point out that when she says books like Martin Luther King and the March on Washington, these books are books that have been rewritten with the social justice and woke ideology weaved within. Now, I have a very unpopular opinion about the civil rights movement. I have a very unpopular opinion about Martin Luther King. That's beside the point. The point is that that particular book that she was talking about was written in the 2010s, maybe late 2010s, possibly early 2020. And there's a retelling of the story from the lens of woke ideology. And I'm Black in the United States. And if I saw that book, and if I were about petitioning for books to be pulled off the shelves, I would have that book pulled off the shelf as well. But people hear, oh, Martin Luther King, and they just automatically think, oh, you know, what could be possibly wrong with Martin Luther King? What they don't understand is that these books can have inoffensive sounding titles, but because it's revisionist in nature and it's teaching children a revisionist view of history, that's why the parents are objecting. And the parents have every right to object to something that has been, quote, wokeified and tried to pass off as acceptable education or acceptable books to read. And I'm not sure I understand why there's an insistence of the presence of these books in school libraries. Okay, full disclosure, questionable books have been in school libraries for a very, very, very long time. I think the pandemic really just kind of peeled back the curtain and allowed parents to see, whoa, what in the world is going on here? I remember being in the ninth grade and there was a wall of books right to the left of the door as you're leaving the media center. The overwhelming majority of those books were romance novels. Romance novels. And if anyone knows what romance novels, what they have in them, they are very graphic and explicit depictions, not depictions, but descriptions of physical intimacy between men and women, and some books, men and men, depending on what the storyline is. And so questionable books have been in the library for a very, very, very long time. It's just that now parents are 10, 20 years behind the curve and realizing, oh, wow, this is what they're actually teaching our students. And parents have a right to be angry because we're trusting these people with our children, and these people have sought out to pervert the children. You know, they will make the argument that these are people's stories and people need to be seen and people need to be heard and different perspectives, different experiences need to be explored through the avenue of literature, through the avenue of books. But see, here's the problem with that. There's a way to explore these topics, to dive into these topics without deliberately setting out to pollute the reader. We have to be very, very careful with sin, whether it's the depiction of it, the discussion of it, of course, the behavior aspect of it, because sin contaminates, sin destroys, sin pollutes. And so if you want to talk to people about the issue of, say, sexual abuse, there's a way to do it without pulling the person down with you, without contaminating the person into seeing and hearing and feeling and thinking all of those things that are described, that are depicted in these books. Beneth Peters Jones was the wife of Bob Jones III, if I remember straight. And she had an upbringing where that was the case in her childhood. She talked about it all of the time, but she talked about her experience in such a fashion that uplifted people, that shone a light on the problem, but she didn't glorify it. She didn't tease out every gory detail and every gory experience, but she shined the light on the issue, called the sin out for what it was, and called people to turn to Christ in light of that particular sin, however that happens to be in that particular situation. And she was talking to fundamental Baptist circles, and no one in the fundamental Baptist circle banned her. And she was talking about these very same things. Why? Because it's how it's done. Because of how it's done, there is a way to do it where you don't pollute the people that are listening to you at the same time. It seems like there's this glorification, this commiseration in victimhood, and you just have to lay out all of the gory, dirty details and let others commiserate with you and become filthy and dirty and wallow in that sin with you, or wallow in the sin that happened without there being any redemption or any hope or any turning to the Savior. It's no, I was pulled down, I was dirtied, I was sinned against, and so I'm going to pull you down with me. That's what's really happening here. And that's what the members of Moms for Liberty are fighting against. And so that's something that we should take into account as well.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there. And the question begs, though, because this is the ultimate problem, well, at least one of the problems with this. Who gets to introduce your children to things like these.
Yeah.
Because if it is going to be the public school teacher or the books that the library gives to them, we have a problem.
Right.
Shouldn't it be parents who introduce the kids to the birds and the bees and all the other stuff and even some of the filth that's around them?
Sure.
It should be the parents in a protected environment. You can introduce the kids to certain things and say, hey, this is what the Bible teaches here. This is what these people are doing here. This ain't right, but this is right.
Yeah.
And model that for their kids. But no, it's an indoctrination. They want to introduce the kids to it. They want to make sure the kids grow up and be like them rather than to be like the parents. But let's go on to clip four, actually.
Let me give you an example.
Well, I'd like to answer your question.
Please do. Yeah.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a list of books. And so Moms for Liberty doesn't have like a national book list. There was never a list of books that we put out and said, parents, be concerned about these books, right? We didn't do it because we want our parents to be effective advocates. Mm-hmm. So when moms are going into the libraries and the schools, when they're seeing what their children have access to, when they go to speak to the superintendent or the principal, they have accurate information, right?
They're effective advocates. And where are they getting their information from?
You can just go online to a catalog in your children's library, and you can see what
without
books
reading
are
the books. What is What is booklooks.com?
I'm aware of a website called booklooks.com where parents can go and see some of the books that other parents are concerned
about. Booklooks.com has been used in Florida extensively in counties like, I used to live in Broward County. I lived there for 14 years.
Okay.
In counties like Broward, counties like Clay, counties like Escambia, Moms for Liberty activists are using booklooks.com. And it's essentially a cliff notes for books.
Yeah.
So you go through without even having to read the book. I'm going to just hold it up so our audience can see what it looks like. This is the one for All Boys Aren't Blue, which is one of the books Moms for Liberty has
Everyone should go and see the content in this book. That's such a good
idea. And so what happens is you can do keyword searches and find certain keywords.
Like rape.
You can find sure.
Or anal rape or dildo.
You can find all sorts of keywords.
Those types of words.
But like wait, hold on. Let me finish my question.
Okay,
then
great,
you can answer.
Sure.
I'm going to give you time to answer, but I got to ask you first.
No, yeah, I got the question.
And so what you find is the keywords that you find, the N-word, anything, words like you just used, you'll get out of context passages from the book. And then based on that, Moms for Liberty members are going to places like Broward County School Board meetings, reading out of context passages from these books, and then demanding that the school board remove them.
So what's
that
the
is the way?
Yeah.
The question I'm asking is, what is the expertise that you have and other Moms for Liberty advocates have to decide that a book, an award-winning book like All Boys Aren't Blue, isn't appropriate for students to read? What is your expertise?
What a tragedy.
All right.
I was trying so hard not to lose my mind listening to that clip. Oh, goodness. Okay, I'm sorry, MCG. Go ahead.
Firstly, Joy Reid, it is booklooks.org.
And everyone should
and
go
parents
there.
Parents is an excellent resource, especially if you decide to put your kids in public school. I don't know why you would, but if you so happen to put your kids in public school, booklooks.org is an excellent resource for you to get a cliff notes, as Joy Reid said, of the book that your kids may be exposed to.
Yes.
And then why should I have to read the filth to tell my kids they can't read the filth? If there's a resource out there that I can check and say, okay, this book is filth, well, I can, you know, decide, okay, in 5 minutes, no, you can't read this book. And in what context can you talk about homosexuality involvement with kids and it's appropriate? Especially if you're not their parent.
Yeah.
You know?
For those of you that are listening to the podcast and you can't see MCG, he's just at a loss for words, just kind of threw his hand up. And I'm flabbergasted as well. I went to booklooks.org to see what the hullabaloo was about. And it made me grateful for the site. And you know, I'm even more convinced that I don't need any so-called context because there's no scenario in which such graphic content or vulgar content is even remotely acceptable. If they were trying to get their point across, it could have been done without the immoderate and unrestrained descriptions, and not just explicit, as I mentioned, vulgar, actually vulgar. And so when Joy Reid says, quote, expertise, what she means is what PEN America said before. Oh, the school expert, the teacher experts, these people that are the intelligentsia, we up here and you peasants down here, you need to hear what we have to say because we know better. We went to school for this. But in reality, what's happening is that indoctrinated K through 12 students are being accepted into these indoctrination factories called American universities, and they're going into these indoctrination camps called teacher education, and they are spitting out indoctrinated teachers who are absolutely blinded and sold to this ideology so that they can go out and indoctrinate and blind the children. When we look at it in that light, there's absolutely no reason why we would believe and trust any of these people with our children. And I think that parents need to be empowered. Don't let these people scare you away because they are the experts. And she used the word like award-winning. Why should you bend and quote award-winning book called All Boys Aren't Blue? This so-called award-winning book is written by people who prescribe to a particular ideology, and they form all of these academic-sounding organizations for themselves, by themselves, to congratulate themselves when they make their books, and they give it awards so that they can propagate it to the rest of the world and say, this is the standard, and if you don't like it, well, you're a bigot, you're stepping on parents' rights, you're not the expert, you don't know. It's a means to undermine the parent. You don't need a college education to know that you could get a point across without stepping into those deep, sinful waters. We're homeschooling our boys, and it's amazing to me how the boys have been able to learn to read simply using the McGuffey readers. The McGuffey readers, I'm sure folks listening to the podcast know what they are. They're able to learn to read and to explore many cool things about the world without being exposed to that filth. And so, you know, if we want to talk about award-winning, what does God say about the book? Does that book hold up or match up to the standard in Philippians 4:8, where the Bible tells us to focus on those things that are good, that are true, that are pure, that are lovely? Does it meet God's standards? Or are we so captivated or enslaved to the fear of man that we will allow any filth into our home just because it's been approved by the world or by the intelligentsia or by Professor so-and-so? Parents have the right to decide what those books should be.
But here's the double standard, though, because you're talking about standard. Just go to YouTube and search for parents reading these very books to the school board members at parent-teachers meetings or school board parents meeting. 100% of them have been shut down and been pushed out of the meetings because they were reading inappropriate content at the school board. The very same books that they're giving to your kids, they don't want to sit in a meeting where a disgruntled parent is reading the same content. And not only that, double standard again. If you take a picture of some of the contents of these books and post them without any filter on YouTube, YouTube will either remove the content or make it. YouTube have this thing where you have to sign in to prove you're 18, what they call it. They will censor it or make it adult content.
Right.
So you have to sign in to see it. YouTube will do that.
Yep.
YouTube is saying it's not appropriate for us to show it. The school board is saying it's not appropriate for us to hear it, but it's okay for the kids to read it, to take it home, to ingest it, and do whatever the case may be.
If Tiffany Justice had read any excerpt from any of those books live on air, they would have quickly shut that thing down. They would have quickly shut it down. It's unacceptable, and they know it is. And parents, I can't stress this enough. I'm talking to all of us, myself included. When these so-called professionals, when this intelligentsia or whoever they are, these educational professionals say that they know what's best for your children, let's take it from their own lips.
And note,
yep, go ahead.
Most of them don't even have children, but go
most
ahead.
Most of them don't even have children. They don't even believe in having children. But we're going to go back to PEN America because Joy Reid keeps quoting PEN America. I was on PEN America's website and they had a frequently asked questions section where, you know, I think one of the questions was, are there pornographic books in schools? And this is PEN America's answer. I just lifted it verbatim because I could not believe what they said. Quote, librarians and educators choose books for their literary and educational value. Books banned in American schools do not fit the well-established legal and colloquial definitions of, quote, pornography or indecency. Material can only be deemed obscene if it meets three criteria outlined in the Miller test, which asks if the average person applying contemporary community standards would find that a work taken as a whole, one, appeals to prurient interest, 2, depicts or describes in a patently offensive way sexual conduct specifically defined by the applicable state law, and 3, lacks serious literary, artistic, political, or scientific value. So in the high school that I grew up, I mentioned the wall of books and how 90 or 70% of it were romance novels, graphic depictions of physical intimacy. And that's only words. These books have pictures, actual pictures. And I mentioned before, it's not like they're using the standard medical term for male and female anatomy. No, they're using vulgar terms that are considered swear words by any dictionary that you would use online. By Webster's Dictionary, any of these vulgar words would be considered swear words. These are the books that Moms for Liberty are seeking to pull off the shelves. By their own definition, the books that have been banned are pornographic. By their very own definition, by this so-called Miller test that they purport to hold to, it's completely indefensible. And the fact that these so-called educated experts believe that this is acceptable shows how morally bankrupt and completely incapable they are to be determining what our children read, what our children should have access to. They're incompetent. They don't have that authority. They're wrong, period.
Yep. Let's go into the other clip because I think they get a little bit more into expertise in this one.
What a tragic story of a young man who's anally raped by his adult family member. So you have incest, rape, pedophilia. Joy, you said you'd let me answer, so
sure.
I'm going to answer
Please
for
do.
You. In what context is a strap-on dildo acceptable for public school? Just, that's my question to you. Tell me what the context around the strap-on dildo or the rape of a minor child by a teacher.
Hold on a second.
We're talking about public school.
One moment.
All right.
So now you've asked me a question.
Sure.
And I'm going to answer it.
Okay.
Well, who is the main character? What's the name of the main character in All Boys Aren't Blue?
You're asking me right now.
You just gave me very specific information about this book, so you're presenting yourself as somebody expert.
It's the gentleman.
Who's the main character in the book?
The main character is the author.
What's his name?
George, I believe, is his first name.
Because you're giving me very specific information that is
presenting yourself
as an expert.
You're asking me to remember the name of an author.
You
the name
just
of
remembered
the author
very
doesn't
specific name.
Joy.
Here's my
We're
question.
We're talking about
Here's
strap.
My question.
You didn't answer my question.
No. I'm going to answer
Great.
Your question.
I would love to hear that.
Absolutely. Well, I'm interviewing you, and you're not interviewing me, so let's just make sure it's a conversation, okay?
Okay, great.
So, what I'm saying to you is that as you are not an expert in this book,
I don't have to be an expert to know that dildos aren't appropriate for public school. I mean, come on, let's get real.
This book is a full context story, as you said, of the author's experience. Why is it your right or a Moms for Liberty activist's right to say that a parent who wants their child to have access to this book, which gives a personal experience of this author, why doesn't a liberal parent, for instance, or a parent of an LGBTQ kid, why don't they have a right for their child to just have access to this book? Why is it your right to say they can't?
You know, she said, what expertise do you have? My question to her would be, what expertise do you need to determine filth?
Mm-hmm.
But you know what the thing is? When you're trying to win an argument at any cost, you remember this commercial? Dum, da, dum, dum, dum.
I was like, what does antacid have to do with this?
Well, he didn't say dumb, he said thumbs, but anyways.
Yeah, gotcha.
What expertise do I have, Joy? I'm a parent.
Yeah.
What other expertise do I need? But again, notice she doesn't answer the question. Incest, rape, pedophilia. Some kid can identify with it. When is this appropriate? Because a kid can identify with it. You know, here's the thing. If you want kids to read this book, buy it, check it out from the public library. It has no place in a school where children can have access to it. Plain, blank, and simple. That's a simple solution. Why do we need to put that filth in the schools?
She's being completely disingenuous. Let's not even engage in her particular argument. Her argument is that, kids and parents need access to these books. Why do you feel that you should deny access? Listen, the problem of access is a thing of the past in this information age that we are in right now. You could jump on Google and have access to anything that you want. So the people that would want to have access to this literature, if we can even call it literature, they can have access to this literature without having to pollute the rest of the school without having to expose the rest of the kids to this filth. I mentioned before that they said, if you don't want it, you should fill out an opt-out form. And that way, your kid won't have access to it. But that's actually not true, because any student could walk into the media center, walk into the school library, and the book is on the shelf. They can pick the book, take the book from the shelf, open it, look through it, read it, and put it back. And they never had to check it out. That opt-out form will only prevent your student from checking the book out. But if it's on the shelf, they are still exposed to it. So what I'm saying is, why is the standard so low for decency? If we have a group of people that absolutely feel like it's important to have a graphic book depicting things like what they mentioned that shouldn't even be just spoken aloud, why don't they just, we have the technology, why not have it password protected, write protected, opt-out protected electronically? And if you, as a, say, LGBTQ parent, want your child to read that book, you have access to it. And we don't have to have access to it. We don't need to see it on the shelf. My kid doesn't have to go into the library and be exposed to it. So this argument about the lack of access is completely disingenuous. It's a farce. Like you said, she's just trying to win an argument. There is absolutely no scenario in which access is a problem. The problem I think we have in the world today is a little bit too much access, if you can make that argument.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. And so, and I understand these people that we are talking about, that we are talking to, that we are fighting against. I mean, there's an evil spiritual power behind them. Ephesians 6 makes that incredibly clear, that we're not fighting against the flesh. We're fighting against spiritual wickedness in high places, principalities. The enemy wants the pollution and destruction and the tearing down of our children. This is one of the many ways to do it. When you expose children to these adult things early on, it has a warping effect on them. There's just no denying that. There is absolutely no denying that. And so it's not a good faith argument that she's making there. She's talking about experts, experts, experts. Again, I made my point about that. These experts are morally bankrupt and they have absolutely no authority. There's no reason why we should trust them with the education of our children.
You know, going back to the days when the dinosaur roamed the earth, when when we all had to go into the office, get up in the morning and commute how many miles in traffic trying to get to work. And then COVID happened and then all the dinosaurs die and we can work from home. Well, during that time, I remember that I went to a website at work. The name of the website, BassProShop.com. And I got a message on my computer that says that this website has been blocked. Why? Because you can buy firearms on the website. Now, I don't quite remember if I was going to Bass Pro Shop to look at firearms. That is a possibility, but I more believe I was going to look at something else. Anyways, they blocked the website. Mm-hmm. Bass Pro Shop, the outdoorsman. Mm-hmm. But yet, I could have gone and read any of these books online. We could have gone to any of the other filthy websites that they won't block. My point is this.
Yeah.
They know.
They know.
It's just the ideology, because the thing is,
that's why I don't believe
Bass Pro Shop is blocked, because they figure no one should have guns.
Yeah. I don't believe she believes what she's actually saying.
She doesn't.
I don't think she believes
what she's
saying.
She was caught on a hot mic a few weeks ago cursing Joe Biden.
Yeah.
Saying that he's a warmonger or whatever she said. But when the camera's on, she's smiling, grinning, say all nice things about
it. Advocates for it, right?
All things about Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. They don't believe what they say.
They
but anyways,
yeah.
You're listening to the Removing Barriers podcast. We are discussing Joy Reid versus Mom for Liberty and their viral discussion about book banning. We'll be right back.
Do you have the desire to earnestly contend for the faith which was once delivered unto the saints? Answers in Genesis can help. They provide biblically sound books, CDs, DVDs, homeschooling materials, VBS materials, online courses, digital downloads, and the Answers magazine, and more. Plus, tickets to the Creation Museum and Ark Encounter. Go to the Answers bookstore by clicking the link in the description section below so you too can be ready to give an answer to anyone who asks the reason of the hope that is in you. Hi, this is Jay. MCG and I would like for you to help us remove barriers by going to removingbarriers.net and subscribing to receive all things Removing Barriers. If you'd like to take your efforts a bit further and help us keep the mics on, consider donating at removingbarriers.net/donate. Removing Barriers, a clear view of the cross.
All right, Jay, we have been discussing the excellent wisdom of Joy Reid versus Moms for Liberty. Here is the sixth clip that we want to look at.
So, again, we're talking about incest, rape, and pedophilia.
And Boy, each parent, each parent has to decide what is appropriate for their child to read. So I want you to answer. I'm going to ask you one more time. Right. What is your right to tell a parent who wants their child, who might feel seen by this story? Why don't they have the right? Why don't they have the right as a parent to say, my child can have access to this book?
If a child feels seen by this story, that means that they have been the victim of a predator. That means that they have either been raped by a family member, they've experienced
And your proof of that is what?
You just said that if a child feels seen by this story.
You're now making assumptions
But if a child has been raped, we should do a lot better than put a book on a library shelf.
Now you're literally creating a story behind a child that you don't know.
I can't.
This is just totally awful.
Oh.
Joy, you said it.
Yes, she said it.
You know, I had a coworker like this that you would argue like this, and he was just like, you know, do you have two brain cells you can rub together? I remember distinctly a coworker just like this. She would use analogies or use examples, and then when you take her example to the logical end, she would ask the same question like Joy we just did. As I said, she's not trying to be honest here. She's trying to win an argument. And again, I can't help but to say, dum da dum dum dum. That's for Joy Reid.
But okay, so here's the problem there, right? We still have to share a country with people who are like this, who believe things like this. I don't think Joy Reid actually believes what she's saying, but there are people out there who actually believe this sort of thing. I remember watching a Timcast segment where Emma Vigeland was debating this very thing about these terrible books in schools. Lance of the Serfs as well. They actually say that they see nothing wrong with these books in the schools. These are people who actually hardcore believe that it's a good thing to have these books in the school. And we have to share a country with them. We have to share these public schools with them. We have to share the public space with them. We have to find a way to live and get along. So the question is, how do Christians do that? I think that in these cases, Christians really have to get off the bench and engage their neighbor, talk to their neighbor one-on-one to engage them on these particular issues and share the gospel with them and show them what thus saith the Lord and to show them the logical progression, the progression that we've been able to see in the last 2 years, 2 or 3 years, right before our very eyes since the pandemic, how detrimental it's been, not just to the children, but to families and to the nation as a whole, how it divides, how it destroys. There's nothing about it that brings people together. Christians really need to be on the forefront of pointing people to the gospel of Jesus Christ, because again, we are not wrestling against people here. We are in the sense that these people have given themselves over to this ideology and they believe it. But the Bible says in Ephesians chapter 6, if I could just read it quickly, it says, "Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that ye may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil." This is just one of the many wiles of the devil. Verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." For every Joy Reid, there is a CEO, there is a politician, there is somebody that's high up, and behind that high person is the enemy himself. It's the world, it's our own flesh, all of these things that we are fighting against. This is not a merely political or merely educational battle. This is spiritual warfare.
Well, we know they don't believe some of the things they teach because they don't live that way.
They don't live that way.
Joy Reid, as far as I know, is a married mother in a household of a husband and a wife. Mm-hmm. Obama has two daughters. He's with his wife of many years. Joe Biden has been married for 40 plus mm-hmm. years. Mm-hmm. They don't live the way that they're pushing on people.
And none of their children are educated in this ideology. All of them went to private schools and things.
Exactly.
Like,
but not only that, remember when Nancy Pelosi was the House Speaker, she was giving a speech and they were going to get rid of certain gender terms in the House when they're referring to, like, I think they were getting rid of stuff like mother and father and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And then right after that, she went into a speech. And guess what she said? I'm a mother. I'm a grandmother. I'm like, did you just say
you're going to get rid of that language?
They don't believe what they... It's pure politics for them. But anyway.
So the Christian, Ephesians 6 continues. What should we do about it? We should stand, therefore, having our loins girt about with truth. And the left would have us to think that this is their truth. Truth is relative. Truth is whatever we feel like it is. If you're a boy, you should feel like you're a boy. And if you want to be seen in these obscene books, then that's just your truth. And there is one objective truth, and that's the Word of God. And Christians really ought to quit being ashamed of that and quit ceding ground to the enemy on that. Have on the breastplate of righteousness. Verse 15, shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. We're not really going to strike fights with people, but we are going to share the gospel with them that they might have peace. As much as these people follow their ideology, they are not living a life of peace. They are not at peace within themselves. That's why they're taking the drugs and the puberty blockers and doing the surgery and hacking themselves and cutting themselves and all of these different things. They're not at peace with themselves. They're not at peace with their neighbors because their neighbors don't know how to interact with them. They're not at peace with God because they're at odds with him and they're continuing in their sin. These are very miserable and unhappy people. And I'm not saying that so as to point fingers at them and say, ha ha, look at you. It's more like a, oh my goodness, if not by the grace of God, there go I. Lord, please use me to reach this person that is caught in this ideology that's absolutely destroying them. Verse 16 says, to take the shield of faith, wherewith we shall be able to quench all the fiery darts of the wicked. We must have faith that the word of God is true and that he says what he means and he means what he says. When he says that male and female created he them, Christian, are you standing on that? Or are you just kind of saying, well, you know, some people may feel differently. Are you seeding that ground? When God tells you to go talk to that person at the gas pump or at the laundromat or the child that has come to you that has gender confusion and you feel somewhat, there's a trepidation, right? Like that on the TikTok video, she said, well, you know, I don't believe that, but I also don't want to say something against trans people. That's the fear of man. And will you take up the shield of faith that says that with God, there is no respect of persons and that God will give you the words to say when it's time to say them and that God's word is true? Will you take up that shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit? This is how the Christian is to fight back. It's not all gloom and doom. I don't want to sound like a black pill.
Yeah, don't forget the gospel, sharing the gospel.
Yes, the preparation of the gospel of peace. Absolutely. Sharing the gospel with them. I hate to sound so black pill because when you listen to people like Joy Reid, we're sitting here, you can't see us because it's an auditory podcast, but all of us, we're kind of pulling out our hair and just can't believe the things that are coming out of her mouth. And then when you hear these things, it's possible to become so black pilled and to give into despair. But there is no reason to give up hope or despair. God's word is every bit as efficacious as it was from the beginning. And we just have to trust God and take him at his word and engage these people in love with the preparation of the gospel of peace.
Yep. Here is clip 7.
Let me show you a form. This is a form that can be obtained in Broward County, Florida. Okay. I'm going to show it to the audience, and then I'm going to show it to you. Okay. This is called
Can I see it?
I'm going to hand it
to you.
So much. It's called the opt-out form.
Okay.
An opt-out form would allow any parent, because you said you are in favor of parental rights.
I am.
It would allow any parent to opt out of their child being able to take books out of the library without their parents' permission.
Okay.
So that Moms for Liberty, why not advocate that every school in America have an opt-out form so that a parent who doesn't want their child to access a book like All Boys Aren't Blue,
right,
that they can make that choice? Because then each parent, including a liberal parent, a black parent, a parent who wants their child to read a book about African-American history, then
we
they
want
get all, their
we
rights.
Want children to read books
why
about
not just
American
opt
history,
out
so.
For yourself rather than tell other parents what they can and cannot
First
have
of all,
their
I think what you're talking about here is a wonderful step in the right direction.
No.
We should be having conversations about this. This is about local control. Mm-hmm. A lot of these decisions are made at the local school board level.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where these decisions should be made. And there should be vibrant conversations
sure.
about what's happening in our public schools and what kids have access to. Joy, however, mm-hmm. Maybe we could just put all the books with all the graphic sexual content. The dildos, you're not the just, rape, the
incest. I'm sorry.
Let's do
I'm
a,
so sorry.
Let's do
excuse
a back
me,
room.
Excuse me.
Let's
excuse
put a curtain
me,
up in the library
first of
like
all,
they used
hold
to
on,
do.
One moment.
The video
one moment.
Stores. Remember
the
we were little
moms
and
for
you go
liberty.
To the video store?
The books that moms for
and they
liberty.
Put those
the
books
that moms for liberty.
Videos with pornography.
But you spoke a bit on this already, yeah. Jay, so I'm not going to say much on it, except just to agree with you, because it would not work.
No, it wouldn't.
Because, as you said, what is going to stop the kid from going to the library and grab it off the shelf and sit down and read?
We have to remember that children have a flesh too, and the devil is actively engaging them on the level of their flesh to pull them to see and to do and to experience things they ought not to be partaking in. So if you simply have the book on the shelf, you have to assume that your kid is going to go pick it up and read it, because the flesh, don't trust your kid's flesh. Don't trust your flesh and don't trust your kid's flesh. So this whole opt-out thing that Joy Reid is talking about, as I mentioned, is disingenuous because it does not keep the filth away from the children.
The only way this will work is somewhat similar to what Mrs. Justice was saying, is that either the librarian would have full control over those books, and if a kid wants to read that book, we'd have to come and ask for the book. The librarian can check and see, does this kid have permission to read these books that are off limits, whether they're locked away or something? And then maybe that will work.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's not going to work, because the problem is not whether they can check the book or to take it home. The problem is access to the filth.
Yeah. Every single Marine has a rifle assigned to them, or a pistol, depending on what rank you are. But there are certain weapons in the armory that you don't just have access to just because you're a member of the unit. There are certain machine guns and grenade launchers and things like that that you can't just walk in there and say, oh, hey, can I get that machine gun, or can I get that? Because that's not, you have to, number one, have the credentials, as it were, or you have to have the particular MOS. And you can't just walk in there and request these things. Well, it's the same thing with these books. If these controversial books are something that you want to have access to, have the credentials, let's say it's this opt-out form, and then that way you can go to the librarian who has full control to the access of these books, just like the armorer would these other weapon platforms. And if they cross-reference your name, your ID, with the list of kids that have an opt-out for that particular book, because your parent for some reason thinks it's okay for you to read that book, well then fine. That way, we're not impeding on your access to these books, this so-called precious access. The access is still there, but the students that don't need to be exposed to that nonsense are not exposed to it. So her argument was completely disingenuous about the opt-out form there. That makes no sense.
All right, here's clip 8.
Behind I know that you, I've seen,
we could just do that in the public
have seen
library.
Tapes of what Moms for Liberty does, and you all go into school board meetings,
Joy,
and you read
a
graphic stuff.
Disingenuous conversation.
No, it's not.
There's America used to understand that there's something called age-appropriate
beloved.
Content.
And right, and here's my
we
question
have
again. Again,
on movies.
Again. Ruby Bridges Goes to School is on the list of books that Moms for Liberty has attempted to have removed.
Absolutely not.
It absolutely is. Let me ask about the people who are making the decision for their parents, because you have not answered yet why a liberal parent or an African-American parent
can't say
my... We
have parents who are Democrats
no.
who are members
One
of
moment,
our organization.
But you're still trying to make decisions for all the kids. Here are some of the parents that are filing, or some of the your advocates.
Mm-hmm.
Bridget Ziegler, the Moms for Liberty co-founder, the wife of the recently ousted Florida Republican Party chairman, Christian Ziegler, who allegedly was involved in threesomes, same-sex threesomes. Mrs. Ziegler was removed from the school board at which she was a leader. You've had
she wasn't
Lauren,
removed
one moment.
From the school board.
Okay, you have Lauren DePaola. She was making book ban requests in Alachua County, but then records show that she and her husband didn't live there. They'd sold their home in that county. Carrie Blair in Tennessee, who was arrested for property theft charges after allegedly stealing from Target, skip scanning in Target. Why should those three people get to make decisions about what other children should be able to read, other parents' children should be able to read?
So when you cannot win an argument, you go to character assassination. Now, I don't know the people she mentioned, but regardless of their lifestyle, if they say kids should not be exposed to these things, that have been the standard in this country for hundreds of years until yesterday. But again, I'm not even going to defend these people. My pet peeve here is that she said liberal parents or African-American parents. Like, come on. What in the world is it that, what, African-American parents accept all the filth out there? There are no African-American parents out there that will say, I don't want my kids to have this filth. So why is it a liberal parent, an African-American parent? That's so annoying.
It's a cult.
That's so annoying to me. It's like,
it's a cult. If you're in a cult, you walk in lockstep with our ideology, even if you don't really believe it. It's a cult.
I guess if you don't know if you're for me or Biden, you ain't black, huh?
Yeah, that's exactly the attitude that they have. Black people are a monolith. Black people are stupid. Black people are this, that, or the other. They're going to buy all of this stuff hook, line, and sinker. This is our ideology. Walk in line with us or get out the way.
Yeah. If someone is a hypocrite, that doesn't invalidate the truth. And if you're black, that doesn't mean you are all fulfilled.
Yeah.
Well, she said African-American. So if you're African-American, doesn't mean you're all fulfilled either.
Yeah.
Anyways, we'll conclude with this last clip, clip 9 of Joy Reid's Excellent Wisdom.
Do you know that I served as a school board member from 2016 to 20?
Are you going
to
answer my question?
Yeah, I'm
because
going
we don't
to.
Have an endless time.
Joy, I'm going to answer your question, but I need you to understand that when I was an elected representative, I would sit on that dais. Mm-hmm. And how dare I, sitting there as an elected representative, judge a parent when they would come to the podium to speak and advocate for their child? Because as we started this conversation, we'll end it. Every parent has a fundamental
and
right
so
to direct
parent,
the upbringing of
so
their children.
Sure
and I would not stand in
a,
judgment,
let us
Joy,
end on a point of agreement.
About a parent's
if
education
a parent,
level,
moment,
their
moment,
sexual orientation,
if a parent,
their race, their
if
religion.
A parent,
that is not what America is about.
I'm going to answer. I'm going to ask my question,
yes,
Ms. Justice. Mrs. Justice, that's
thank
fine.
You.
If a parent believes that their child should be able to read Ruby Bridges,
We child. Believe that parents
okay.
and children should be able to read.
Then how can Moms for Liberty insist that the school board take that book away and then say that a parent who wants the child to be able to read it must purchase it? That's essentially putting a tax on parents who want their children to read the book. Your kids get to have books for free that you agree with, but children who want to read or parents who want their children to read books you don't like have to purchase it. That doesn't sound
Joy,
fair.
Did you know that in the city that we're sitting in, only a quarter of children are reading on grade level.
That's a great point.
Grade.
That's a great point.
And so while we're having this conversation about books
point.
In libraries,
that's
two things
point.
Should be happening.
That's a great
we
point.
We should be talking about literacy rates and the fact that America's kids are not learning how to read. And we should be having vibrant conversations about what books should be in libraries.
Absolutely.
You know what the bottom line is? I'm going to treat it over, Jay, for you to have the last say. But the bottom line here is not even the books. But for the LGBTQIA propaganda, everybody in this country would agree that pornographic books should not be given to kids, but for the LGBTQIA agenda.
I'm really glad that Tiffany Justice ended with that point. I was under the understanding that the purpose of the schools was to educate the children, teach them how to read, teach them math, teach them these different things. She said only 25% are reading at grade level. That means 75% are not. Did I hear that statistic properly? Hey, let's go back to the McGuffey readers. You want to do that? Let's go back to the McGuffey readers. There's no reason in the world other than indoctrination, other than pulling your children into the realms, the deep waters of sin. There's no other reason that I can think of to expose children to these kinds of books. And I think that, as I mentioned before, Christians, listen, if we didn't understand that we were in spiritual warfare before, I think that listening to what these people are saying in combination with what we see a lot of teachers posting on TikTok from their classrooms, what they're actually teaching their students, then let that be a wake-up call in terms of what we're actually witnessing today. And parents, perhaps we need to be consistent too, in the sense that if we are against these books, these graphic novels, in our schools. Let's not bring it into our homes either. Let's not allow our children to have unfettered access on YouTube and all of these different mediums, and we don't know anything about it, and they are being exposed to these things. I couldn't believe what I saw the other day. I was talking to MCG about it. I was watching a news clip from a local news source on YouTube, and one of the commercials that came up that I could not skip, it was one of those skippable commercials, had graphic depictions of sexual intercourse that's drawn with a pencil. I'm not even sure what the ad was for. It was probably for some medication or something or another. Even the commercials that are coming across our screens on YouTube and on all these other streaming platforms are not safe. The enemy is looking for any way to get a foothold into the minds, what our pastor calls the eye gate, the ear gate, all the different gates that we have that let information in. The enemy is actively looking to destroy children and parents with this information by means of the exposure. And so this isn't primarily about parents' rights. I think. This is primarily about standing on the word of God and agreeing with what thus saith the Lord. And he's made it absolutely clear that this ain't it. I can't even put it into different words. I can't even put it into eloquent sounding ending to say that this is absolutely, fundamentally, terribly wrong, what we're allowing the government to do to our children.
Yep. Maranatha, oh Lord, cometh.
This is the Removing Barriers podcast. If the podcast or the blog were a blessing to you, leave us a rating and a review on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share the podcast with your friends. Removing Barriers, a clear view of the cross.
Thank you for listening. To get a hold of us, to support this podcast, or to learn more about Removing Barriers, go to removingbarriers.net. This has been the Removing Barriers podcast. We attempted to remove barriers so that we all can have a clear view of the cross.